Welcome to the Futile Podcast. Tonight we got Mark and Ian, and let's see. We're going to talk about Last Man Standing, directed by Walter Hill, with Bruce Willis and Christopher Walken, Bruce Dern, Michael Imperioli, otherwise known as Spider from Goodfellas, or
Leslie Mann, otherwise known as Mrs.
Apatow's in it.
As a whore.
And we got Sully from Commando, who's my favorite, as Doyle.
Who also plays, what was his character's name in 48 Hours?
Yeah, something crazy in 48 Hours.
No, he was sort of he was the partner that was holding on the money for Eddie Murphy.
And
he's the one Gans, the bad guys, crazy. Come after.
Vincent? Yeah. Anyway, so this is a early 20s bootlegged. Actually, you know what? It would have to be late 20s to be the bootlegging, wouldn't it?
1919.
Yes. Oh, I guess it could be. Yeah, so it's the 20s. Bruce Willis plays a who knows what shifty criminal type of some sort that's trying to get out of town, going to Mexico, just out of the way. I get the impression that he was probably a tough time hit for some kind of group and basically just had to get out of town for a while. And so this is like his vacation.
Was the heat on?
The heat was on, and he had to drop everything in 30 seconds flat. He could feel it coming around the corner. So he pulls into this tiny little town that's right on the border, near the border, and because of the prohibition, you've got Irish mob and you've got a Italian mob that each have guys down there just to kind of handle procuring illegal spirits via the, was it the Mexican army or the Mexican police?
They were just paying for them for protection.
For protection, yeah. And what this really gives you is it sets you up for a fistful of dollars, or as it's explicitly stating in the credits, this is a United States version of the Akira Kurosawa film Yojimbo, about a samurai who comes into town and plays two gangs down the middle, sort of to arrive at, you know, for his own gain, to make money. It's a traditional anti-hero that ultimately is doing things to help the town and all
but
that.
But then he's got a soft spot for the ladies.
Yeah, I mean, and Yojimbo, I think, is a superior film to this, but they're different enough, and this has still got plenty of fantastic, you know, gunplay violence and stuff. There's only one gun in Yojimbo.
Well, he's a samurai.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to compare them based on that. It's just the there's a few problems with this movie that I think, I mean, it's clear that with what it's sort of playing on is it's playing on the Western genre a little, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's playing on the sort of hard-boiled genre, too. I mean, Bruce Willis' character is not a detective or anything like that, but he is the sort of guy that's operating in the sludge and the dregs of society.
Well, he is.
But you never really get a sense of what. Well, in this case, his relationship is kind of distanced from those. He's not officially a member of either one of the gangs or anything like that. I mean, he kind of bounces back and forth. So he's operating within this, but still sort of maintaining an individuality or an integrity that keeps him, that separates him from that. At least in this case. Now, we can infer all we want about what his backstory is and what he's going to do, go on to do in
he's
the future.
He's John Smith from Back East.
Yeah, he's John Smith from Back East. Or the man with no name, though the in this case, they give him a name and they make a point of it being something so generic that you're like, who knows? And following in line with that hard-boiled genre, they've got, which they had in a version of Blade Runner also, which was sort of playing on the hard-boiled sort of thing, is you've got the voiceover of the character kind of describing stuff and, you know, gruffly and everything. And for the most part, in most films, I feel like that doesn't really work. Sometimes it's funny. Sometimes it's got some humor and some characterization. And in some cases, it works in certain films. But in this case, where it's like basically like the narrator of the story as the character talking about what's going on and why he pulled into town, and it's sort of redundant to what you're seeing anyway, And in some cases, it's like it's too on the head. And with a film like this, it's almost better where things play a little more ambiguously.
So what's your main problem with the movie?
Really, it's just the voiceover stuff I thought was unnecessary. And it's got a strange pacing that I actually kind of like, because it's still a short movie. It's done in 95 minutes.
Yes, it is.
But it moves really fast. The first and second,
because there's not a whole lot to it.
Well, yeah, but the first and second acts are super fast, and then it takes a little bit of time. But yeah, and it drags a little there with the woman.
And the beating.
And all that. Yeah, there's a couple different situations where they kind of give you his soft side, which is different than, like, in the Yojimbo version. They never really give that. It's just sort of, he does what he does and then takes these guys out and then leaves. He's more of a badass in Yojimbo than he is in this, than the Bruce Willis character is in this. But that's fine. I mean, you know, they need to give a motivation. They need to spell it out to make him seem like he's more of a legitimately good guy, even if he murders a bunch of people to do what's right, which is, you know, what he ostensibly does in this film by showing up and, you know, just massacring.
Taking out, like, 20 armed guys at a time. I, you know, as opposed to, like, an airstrike.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Heck yeah. I mean, like I said, it must have been 15 guys they brought in. It's like, nope, it was just him. He's definitely good with a gun, as they say.
Two guns.
The two guns.
And we're not talking about his dick.
No, we're talking about firearms. Get yourself a firearm.
Good old Bruce Dern.
But, I mean, I in watching it, it feels like there's problems with the editing in a few places. They use a lot of dissolves, which give it kind of a dreamlike quality.
It's very surreal.
Yeah, but I don't know if it needs that in order to work. I mean, I guess maybe that's the angle that Walter Hill's going for, is it's like the color palette is obvious. I don't have any problems with these things. I'm just noting them. Like, the color palette is, you know, the oranges and dismal. It's like hell, you know? It's like, this is like purgatory. This is like hell. He drives into this. Maybe he's dead already. I mean, you can interpret all that stuff. You know, maybe he's on his way to hell after having been killed in this life of miserable, doing worse than shooting people, unarmed people in the back. And he finds this other terrible group of people that are, you know, halfway between going wherever they're going and whatnot. I mean, you know, that's a little allegorical. But just the way, what I get from it when I see those dissolves and when I see things happen really quickly, is it feels like the editing is a little too abrupt, and it seems like things have been cut down a little more. Than they maybe needed to be in the first couple acts. I'm almost saying that I feel like the movie could have had another 10 or 15 minutes to flesh it out, and it wouldn't have felt so rushed in those first two acts, where it's like he literally shows up and then boom, he kills a guy, and then boom, he goes from one side, and then he goes back to the other side. He's basically bouncing back and forth like a, you know, like a pinball or something for a while there.
Ping pong ball.
Yeah, or a ping pong ball or whatever. Just, you know, going from one side of the street and one gang to then back to the other side and the other gang.
Well, that's where the money's at.
Yeah, I know that's where the money's at, but it seems like it's happening too quickly for either side to not just completely get that's what this guy's doing. You know, it doesn't seem like he's able to pull one over on either side.
Well, it kind of makes the point that they're both stupid. The only person he really gave any credit to having brains was Hickey.
Yeah, and Hickey was crazy.
Hickey was a little...
And not there most of the time anyway.
Yeah, that was fortunate for everybody, I think.
Hickey was also just super crazy, too. I mean, that part where he just fires the gun off.
He wasn't insane.
Well, firing the Tommy gun off in his own with his own crew when they were playing cards because he was all mad about something, that seemed a little out there. You know what I mean? It didn't seem very smart.
Right, he's on a hair trigger, but he's not... If he was completely insane, he'd be useless.
Well, of course. So I mean, I guess that's just where I have a few problems with it. Is just a little bit with the pacing at the beginning, the first few parts. It seems like it's just too quick. Now I do like that it kind of takes its time for the latter part, a little bit. You get a few nice shots. The violence is great. It's top notch. You know, guns going off everywhere. And I wanted
people flying around.
I wanted to ask
very unrealistic violence.
Well, yeah, people
you
getting
shoot
shot.
Somebody, they don't fly they, back.
They don't shoot back, and so, but it, yeah, it's a throwback to the Peckinpah stuff and those older western, those more violent westerns. Obviously,
they can't see me nodding.
Yeah, oh, well.
It nobody pays. I mean, it's almost tradition not to pay any attention or have any realism as far as that gun violence goes. But as I was pointing out, those are single stack magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So there's only 7 rounds in each one. 45 is a pretty fat round.
Yeah.
So you go through 14 rounds in each hand in like 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd be... And I mean, he's just pumping away.
Yeah. So you're basically just doing the general... Of course, they show them drop mags,
yeah,
and reload.
30 rounds.
Yeah, exactly. But the count is, well, there are a lot of other guns going off. I imagine they're not being as strict to the realism as.
Well, you know, it's kind of silly. It's like westerns is even more ridiculous
with the six shooters. Yeah.
Because not only were they six shooters, majority of them had fired 6 shots, but in reality, no one carried 6 shots. They only carried 5.
Yeah, for the emergency, you didn't want to blow your foot off, right?
Right, because those old-style revolvers, the firing pin was on the hammer. I think I showed you
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and
time.
You could just
and if
just
you
tap
tapped it,
yeah.
There was a safety, but the sear that held it in place was really easy to break. So if something came down on the hammer while it was in your holster, it would break that little safety, and the hammer would...
fire a bullet through your femoral artery, and you'd be done for.
Yeah, so they'd always keep it on an empty chamber, which was fine because you'd have to draw the hammer back anyway to the fire, and they would draw it to a
just the proper
to a round.
So,
but yeah, it's all kind of ridiculous. But yeah, those 1911s are really nice.
Yeah, they seem like it, but it seems like he's the kind of guns that he's got. Those are most of the people have still got sort of what you think of as like more traditional Western style weapons. You know, there's a lot more revolvers.
No, they
you
have
see.
All. They look like
well, you got the Tommy gun for for Hickey, who is... That's the equivalent of...
Which kind of dates the movie.
Oh, definitely dates the movie. Tommy gun in a movie is going to date a movie pretty heavily.
I'm trying to remember. There were different models, though, and I'm thinking about the 1928 model, which I think was the one that ended up in World War II, the traditional Tommy gun. But
mm-hmm.
I think he'd been working on it since the teens, since World War I. The guy that invented the Tommy gun, I watched a bunch of specials on his channel. It's kind of interesting, and I've read a bunch of articles and stuff about the guy. It was kind of like a Nobel
mm-hmm.
idea of thinking dynamite would... it's kind of a classic story. It just recurred.
You think, well, if you invent a weapon so terrible,
it will, you know...
End war, yes.
And that was sort of his idea.
Yeah, people that have that thinking are that's a supervillain idea. That's naive and idiotic, you know.
And oddly enough, he tried to sell them to the government, and they didn't want them.
Mm.
So there was a whole nother market.
Of course.
And back then, before, of course, the Tommy gun, I think maybe it was in the 30s. But in the 20s, you could legally buy a Tommy gun. There's no law that says you couldn't. I was saying there were restrictions on 1911 because the military, I think, restricted Colt from selling them to the public for a certain period of time. But again, you know, it's like with anything, whether it's drugs, guns, anything
well, yeah.
people want to spend a lot of money on, they can buy.
The criminals are going to get the things they need to be criminals. It's tools of the trade.
But you were talking about all those. That was very classic police... police specials, 1917, Colton Smith and Wesson's.
Yeah.
The kind of the very original, traditional double action revolvers.
Yeah, I mean, really, it's just the same
one last
plot.
Thing, I kind of went off on a tangent, I never got to the whole ammo thing. Those modern, like, you know, what most police officers carry, Glocks and SIGs and... guns like that, they have a wider body. I don't know if you noticed that gun's fairly thin. And they have magazines that are double stacked.
Mm-hmm.
So they carry twice as many, so you end up with Well, I'm sure you remember in Lethal Weapon, 15 in the mag and one up the pipe. And that was considered a big advantage
to have. Oh, definitely, yeah.
But then it was kind of funny. It was a trade-off. It's not so much anymore because of calibers have changed. But for a long time, once other than revolvers, you had the 9mm, which was very standard, and you had the 45. And the 9mm has always had a reputation as not being as effective. So it's kind of a trade-off. Do you want to have more rounds and spray, or do you want to have a larger round, not need as many, but when you hit something, it stops? And that was the whole...
That's where that gun
came from in the first place, because the military, they originally had the old school, the Colt Peacemakers. Mm-hmm. That gun, again, was originally designed for the military as their sidearm. That's why it's called the Colt, it's called the Single Action Army, because it was designed for the Army.
For the Army, yeah.
And it was a 45. It was a 45 long Colt.
It's the same as the Callahan thing, right? You know, I've seen 38s careen off windshields. I want to hit what I aim at. Yeah.
The military modernized, and they went to a double action 38. And in the Spanish-American War, the soldiers hated them because they were having trouble stopping people. People would be charging at them.
The stopping power was
and
shit.
And they'd shoot them again and again and again, and, you know, they'd end up getting shot themselves or stabbed or whatever. So they actually started getting rid of those modern guns and getting the old ones again, so they went back to the old ones. So the military was like, we need to come up with a modern design that has that 45 power. And that's where the 1911, and that's a fascinating story all by itself. You remember in Wall Street, when Michael Douglas and Sir whoever he was, I can't remember the character's name, and he's in his office, his beach house or whatever, and he's got this this glass display of guns, and he pulls out a 45 Luger, and it was, you know, the classic P08, 1908 Luger, but in 45 ACP instead of 9mm. And that all comes from those trials. The government says, you know, we want such and such, and whatever manufacturers want to try to get that contract, they come up with a design and they submit it to all this testing, and Luger and a couple other, and Colt, and that's a John Browning design.
So like a trial gun is probably worth a hell of a lot of money from
right,
a company.
Right, they only made three.
And
that was, I believe there's only one in existence, because those guns get the shit tested out of them. They get fired literally until they break. So he's going on about how it's the most expensive gun in the world, and, you know, it's like a trophy for him.
Oh, definitely.
And, but anyway.
So the real lesson is that not all guns are created equally.
Well, you know, the funny thing about that is it's all famous and Luger and all that, but it wasn't a superior firearm.
No. Otherwise, there would be more of them. They would have won the contract.
They would have won the contract.
Yeah. Yeah, so back to Last Man Standing. I mean, really, really the plot is, it's Yojimbo, his fistful of dollars. It's, like we said, you know, the guy rolls in, he plays two gangs down the middle.
I was wondering, this is a very small plot point. But the Texas Ranger.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything like that.
Yeah, there are differences in each one. This one, I think, true to its, like, Americanization, does try to... I mean, it gives the women as a motivator to make you... the Bruce Willis character, the man with no name, to really do what he does. It pushes him into going further.
That was from A Fistful of Dollars. I don't know about...
Yeah, but Fistful of Dollars had the women, too, that kind of pushes... Yeah. And Yojimbo, I don't believe... It's been a while since I've seen it, but I don't remember that. And I haven't seen all of Fistful of Dollars. I don't believe that there's any sort of higher authority figure in Yojimbo either, like the comparable to the Texas Rangers that's
coming
in.
There wasn't a Fistful of Dollars.
In Yojimbo, the way it's structured is that, like, the townspeople, there are more good townspeople. I mean, he hangs out at the bar, basically, at the tavern or whatever, and he just keeps drinking sake while the guy tells him what's going on. And basically that guy, the proprietor of the, you know, the tavern or whatever, kind of sort of says, maybe you'll stick around and clean this up for us, which is not really an issue in Last Man Standing. He is motivated to just get some money by being a hood for these guys while he's on his vacation or, you know, while he's away...
on the run.
On the run. And in Fistful of Dollars, I'm not sure if that's his motivation or if they just keep it simple. And they just have... shit happens and then all of a sudden he kind of gets into it. Is he working for the town, sort of?
On Fistful of Dollars, he's working for himself.
To clean stuff up? Yeah. Well, okay. I mean,
he's making money. It's the same thing. He's making money.
He is Neojimbo also.
In this, there's nothing to do with the town because the town's dead.
Yeah, that's
true. The town didn't have an undertaker anymore.
The town pretty much is dead in that. And then in Yojimbo, I think it's kind of like he saved the town. He's, you know, now the gang's not there anymore. The villagers can prosper again and everything can kind of do its thing. All three of them have the, you know, as soon as it's done, he just leaves, which is awesome. GTFO, man. Just,
you know, I was going to say, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think there's a whole children scenario, the woman, the kept woman,
uh-huh,
in Fistful of Dollars, and there's, I'm trying to remember, it's been a long time since I've seen it, and I think he gets touched by the woman being parted from her child.
Yeah, and, it could be interesting. I mean, in this case, what you've got is you've got the Sully, you got Sully as Doyle, and there's something interesting.
I wish I could remember what his name is.
There's something really interesting going on there where it seems like he really did.
Luther!
Yeah.
Luther was the character in 48 Hours.
Okay, it's fine. That's great.
And freaking, now I gotta get this out, and Nick Nolte beats the shit out of him with a car door.
Nice. Okay. It was nice. We'll do 48 we'll Hours do at some point soon. But yeah, he's got like a... like, he really cares about the woman, Doyle. I mean, he's got her kept and everything, but the way he talks about it, as opposed to
the dumb Pollock.
As opposed to the blonde that the Italian guy's got, who really he just sort of tolerates and then beats the crap out of. You know, Sully seems to really...
But which is worse?
Well,
I would say
Sully's worse. Sully didn't cut anybody's ear off.
No, but Sully took a mother from her child.
I don't know if we get that impression.
Yeah, we do.
That he took her from the
child. Yeah, because the husband owed him money, and he took his wife. Okay. And took her from her child.
Maybe, that seems weird.
And that's the picture she would pray in front of at the church every day.
Yeah, okay. Well, I hadn't gotten that part. I think that's because we were talking.
We didn't get the impression the dumb Pollock had any children.
Yeah.
And we didn't even bring up Leslie Mann. That's where
the we talked about it. We mentioned it briefly.
No, we mentioned that she was in there and she was a whore.
Yeah.
But that's where you first get the idea that Bruce Willis' character has a soft spot for women. Because he helps her out and gets her out of town and pays
her
bail.
That's true. I think for him it's more... there are the people that have chosen this criminal life, and there are the people that are kind of enveloped in it. You know, like you said, the little fish being eaten by the big fish, that kind of thing.
Like the bartender?
Yeah. The bartender and...
the bartender's probably my favorite character in the whole movie.
Even to a degree, the sheriff, who, like he says at the end, you know,
1%... I like Bruce Dern.
1% of the people that you end up turning out being better than you expected, you know, or whatever. And that's what he's sort of saying about the sheriff, is that... this sheriff is, for the most part, a good guy. He just... well, what are you going to do?
Him.
Yeah,
you can't blame him. He had no chance in hell of stopping the anything.
Yeah, you know, this
he might as well make money off of it.
This is post High Noon. This is post...
it's not like he's a religious man.
Post Rio Bravo. It's like there's no guys to help the sheriff out here in this little town. It's just him and there's two gangs.
There's the Rangers.
When the Rangers decide to finally show up, you know, when it finally gets big, when it becomes a federal case, then they'll show up. Yeah, and that's cool. That was Bob Kelso as the Ranger, the doctor from Scrubs. Yeah,
he was awesome. Oh, right. I have seen a couple episodes.
And he's the older... yeah, he's Bob Kelso from Scrubs, which is cool.
I loved his little monologue. It he just kind of sums it all up.
Yep, he does.
Between him and Bob.
Definitely. Yeah, Bob, who says nothing, just sits there and...
he's got a shotgun.
But Bob...
his ears worked real good, though.
Bob is a scumbucket that worked for Doyle the whole time, I guess.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I had no problem with Bruce Willis giving him a couple extra bullets, even though he was clearly a pile of meat.
I thought it was so cool that the bartender got to shoot the head man.
Shot Doyle, yeah.
For fucking up his town.
He killed Sully for fucking his town.
And he was damn happy about it. You could tell it was a whole catharsis.
I'm done now.
Yeah, he just wanted to watch.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and of course, this is just a fairy tale because, you know, it's funny, like I was talking about Unforgiven just earlier today, and the completely opposite message, but it's a fantasy. It's not.
Oh, yeah, no.
It's definitely
a fable. It's definitely a fable. That plays, like I said, you get that aspect of it with the dissolves and the things, which I have.
And that's why the characters aren't very.
That's why they're kind of melodramatic. They show up, they state themselves, and you kind of get an impression of them, and they're kind of cookie cutter to a degree. You Absolutely. Know, the Italian mobsters are the way they are, the Irish mobsters are the way they are.
I like the way, I can't remember the actor's name, he's been in some stuff. The guy that played Strassi, I liked him.
He hasn't been in stuff in a while, though. But he used to be kind of a regular character. And I think more a good guy type. I don't think he played a lot of hoods, necessarily. Maybe a few other times, but I don't know. I'd have to say this is definitely a recommended film.
Oh, absolutely. This is a great Saturday afternoon movie.
Yeah, for sure, because it's quick, too. I mean, it's 95 minutes and it's done. It's got your violence. It really doesn't pull any punches there.
That's what it is. This movie doesn't make you think real hard. At all.
Yeah, I mean, not really, but you do kind of have to follow what's going on. And there are a few points where it gets a little confusing, but...
Well, any movie, it's worth watching. It's usually worth watching more than once.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, obviously, if you're someone that's like a super fan of Yojimbo or Fistful of Dollars, then you might just be a little incredulous at how similar this film is to them. But it's not saying it's not.
It's an adaptation of the...
It says that in the beginning. Of the Kurosawa scream. Yeah, I already said that it's saying that it is doing that. But on its own, it's got... I mean, it's a different movie. I mean, it's the same plot, but it's got different things going on. And even the character motivations are spelled out differently. And I mean, it's visually different. I mean, they're guns instead of swords. They're cars instead of horses. They're, you know.
Well, I was just gonna say we should watch The Magnificent Seven sometime.
Yeah, that and Seven Samurai is the other comparison. I mean, well, but just as much as people will say, oh, look at all these westerns ripped off Kurosawa. Kurosawa was ripping off Shakespeare all the time too.
It's an homage. You take something good. You read. Traditionally, there's like only seven stories.
Or 30-something if you really get complicated about it, but yeah.
But there's seven basic stories, and they're, you know, it's kind of like music.
No new tale to tell kind of thing, yeah.
Exactly, but you make it, you gotta contemporize things.
Well, it's just like with bebop, you know, that which, you know, blends other genres to the point of becoming a genre unto itself is known as, you know. And so that's really the new thing. That's the cool thing is to say, okay, we understand all these other things, and that's what's really going on in Last Man Standing. It is a traditional Western / samurai, and there are very Absolutely. Great similar. You know, the lone gunman, the lone gun for hire versus the Ronin samurai. The guy, they're both skilled at one thing, and you know, as it comes down to, it's who can draw the gun and who can draw the sword, who's good at one of those two things. Well enough to make a living and to essentially dictate the morality of an area, you know, because if Bruce Willis was a bad guy, he could take over that town and run that town just with his skill with the gun.
But he wouldn't want to.
Well, that's what I mean. If he were a different kind of person, it's the skill that he has that facilitates him being able to save the town. Or not that the town's necessarily saved. I think that this is actually a pretty bleak setup. I mean, everything's just going to get taken out by the dust in the end, and it's going to be a dead ghost town.
Well, you know, that's oversimplifying it. I mean, in reality, he's a very evil man.
Yeah, I know that there's implications of a lot of that, but what you see in the film
is you kill like 50 fucking guys, you're a bad person. I don't give a shit if they're all Jack the Ripper.
Yeah, okay.
It's not your place to judge them.
I know.
If they're about to blow you away, then you do what you got to do, but going around playing them both off each other. I mean, there are a few people in this town. You think some of them might get caught in the crossfire? Mm. He stays in the beginning. Looks like a good place to make a little money.
Yep. No, he knows what he's doing.
But then, you know, you simplify it. And And that's what's great about it. You don't have to think about the reality of it. It's a great story where it's very visceral. The reactions, it's like you want to see him kick the shit out of everybody, and you feel good about it, and sure. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, and so that's really all that's going on there. But that simplicity is why, you know, it is sort of the Western fairy tale and the samurai story. Those are both stuck in that sense of simplicity that there's conflict, there's violence, and the person that is the best at that kind of violence, be it swordplay or be it gunplay,
swords are good too.
The one that wins. Last Man Standing is sort of doing the genre blending thing where it takes the Western stuff and then it's got the hard-boiled stuff too, because visually and aesthetically you're playing on things. I mean, you have cars, you have... The guys are dressed in some cases differently. I mean, they're mobsters. They don't look like, you know, bandits. They look differently. And so it's a little bit of a genre blending movie, and which is why I think at the time it was a little bit, I don't know if it was critically well received. It may have been, or it may have been panned as just being ripping off stuff. I don't remember if it did too well at the box office. I think it did all right, but in a weird way, it was almost kind of maybe ahead of its time for what it was doing in terms of trying to kind of blend things. I think that's a little more hip now than it was then, maybe.
You know, and that's kind of odd, because it was kind of standalone. I can't remember any movies, period movies, like that at that time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. There weren't any that were sort of a different era, but doing... I mean, now it's all over the place. Now you're going to get Michael Mann's doing the movie about Dillinger with Johnny Depp, and... Yeah, so okay, let's final thoughts, let's finish this up.
I was going to say, just that reaction, wanting to keep things simple, wanting things to be black and white, again, it's like I said, it's a great afternoon movie because you're rooting for him to blow the shit out of everybody, and it's fun to watch him do it. Yeah. Because you're like, they're all dirtbags anyway.
Sure, including him.
But that's
it's
okay,
a very nihilistic
you
movie,
feel
though.
Like you feel like he redeems himself with helping the women, and that's fine.
I think I'll give it a 3 out of 5. Because it's...
So we do such a wide range of movies, I don't even know what to base the scale on. It's like, what am I basing it
you
on?
You base it on how much you like it as a movie. Like, how... I mean, and in a weird way, like, for
well,
me...
Well, I have different categories of movies, and I would scale them
but
just in general.
It's not... You know, we're doing this podcast.
I enjoy it as a 4. I enjoy it as a B.
Okay.
I'll give it a B.
Yeah, I guess a 3 is not quite a B. That's well, but it's a
three's
good
a
rating.
C.
A 3 is a good rating.
3's, yeah, that's passive.
I mean, you know, like I'll watch this movie. I would watch this movie again in probably another 10 years or something. But I'm not gonna feel like I need to watch
probably,
it.
Probably this is one of those movies I'd probably watch once a year.
Wow, I'm not that way with hardly anything. And the weird thing is, like, the movies that I really like, that like my five out of fives, are movies that I don't watch for a very long time, like, because I'm so precious
movies,
about them.
And that's, you know, that actually is kind of...
Like,
it's
I haven't
not
seen...
a movie that I really love.
Yeah.
Those movies I can't watch.
Well, they're not as disposable. They're not, like, as consumable.
Right, this is like
eating
a Big Mac.
This is pretty consumable, but my desire to consume it in full is not such that I would give it a better
it's
rating,
like
or that I would give it a worse
rating. It's like
rating.
Shakedown. I'll watch movies like you will just, if you're feeling lazy on a Saturday afternoon and you're flipping through cable.
Oh, yeah.
And you come across something on TNT and you'll sit and watch it for a while.
Oh, that's exactly how I'm rating it, yeah.
That's how some of these movies, that's kind
of
how
that's
I
in the wheelhouse of that, exactly.
I just don't have cable, so I have my own TNT,
No,
basically.
I know, but and I'm there with you on it. That's totally how I feel.
It's have movies that... I don't have to think about it too hard, and I just want to watch something, and I'll have a nice selection that I can just
definitely. And like, this movie is there for sure, because it's got the violence, it's got the action sequences, it's got Christopher Walken, and that's just a fan. It's quick with him, but it's good for a couple spots.
When he starts talking about the little kids going up like candles.
Yeah, burn up like candles.
Just like, God damn.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? It makes you wonder how you'd actually react. I've dealt with some really crazy...
Well, I got the impression that that was all bullshit. And that that was where he was kind of playing along with that. That he didn't really burn an orphanage down when he was 15, you know?
What do you say? Don't believe everything you hear.
Don't believe everything you hear.
But then it's like, is he fucking with you? Is it true or isn't it true?
Yeah, exactly. He is. But he wouldn't fuck with you about is it or isn't it unless he wanted you to know that it was not real. But the sheer fact that people had turned it into this mythos around him made him more formidable than just some dipshit that lights something on fire. You know?
But he was obviously a dangerous person.
Exactly.
And it was interesting, Bruce Willis kind of, he's aware of that.
And he's confident enough to kind of imply that's all bullshit, you know? You know, that's all bullshit, but, you know, I can say that that's all those horror stories about me are bullshit because I'm not, I don't need those horror stories, you know? I look at you, the toughest guy around, the new tough, and I say, yeah, all the stuff they say about me to scare dumb people away, you're not one of those. That's not true. You know that, right? And I can look at you and I can say, don't believe everything you hear. And then let you know that I know that I'm not afraid of you. And that's what he does in that scene, which is great. I mean, like I said, you flip it on TNT and you catch this movie, then you're gonna watch that
thing
scene.
Is he? It's like Bruce Willis does scare the shit out of most of those guys. When he starts blowing away, they kind of just freeze.
Yeah, that's definitely, you know, that's the
fatal and that's
part
true.
Of it, yeah,
that's true. That's what happens to a lot of people. They freeze. They don't react. And,
yeah. You hear about that all the time with people being victimized in all sorts of different ways. They didn't fight back. They didn't know how to react.
It's just
they
kind
couldn't
of
believe
a
it was happening. Yeah.
Of the fight, flight, and it's kind of part of our society. That part of our brain really gets subdued.
Oh yeah, definitely. If you sit around watching movies like this all day, where you see people getting shot at and stuff, you're desensitized. To the fight or flight response.
Well, even just dealing with a lot of, just dealing with the violence of nature. You mm-hmm. know, we don't have to deal with that so much anymore.
That's
we
true, yeah.
We're not out fighting the saber-toothed tigers anymore. So.
Yeah, I still have to remember when I walk down to get the mail to clap a few times in case I don't get pounced on by a mountain lion. Because I know, yeah, if they pounced and got me right, they'd be done for. I know that if they pounced and did it wrong, I would fucking kill it. It'd be dead.
Like
King Kong or something. I would just
break
its jaw. Yeah, it'd go, and I'd break its neck and roll over.
Cherry bombs?
Cherry bombs. Yeah.
And that's how you became a man?
Yes, and that's a good story to end Last Man Standing. I'd be the last man standing.
I kept trying to buy Surviving the Game, but it always got above $1, so I wouldn't buy it for more than $1.
I wouldn't buy that for $1. Anyway, if you want to check us out, you can find us on iTunes with Feudal Podcast. You can email us, feudalpodcast@gmail.com. The website where you get the MP3s is www.graniteseed.com/futilepodcast. You can go to Podcast Alley, search Feudal Podcast, and I think it's under Feudal Title, which was the old blog title. You can find our podcast and vote for it and subscribe to it and keep on keeping on. So we'll keep doing this if we have
how
subscribers.
How many subscribers do you have now?
I haven't checked in a while.
How many on Facebook or on the group?
Oh, in the group we have quite like 40, almost 50 people. But,
yeah, I thought you were pushing 50.
But that's not really indicative of listeners.
No, of course not, but you said it's a numbers game.
So. Yeah, well, of course. And so, I don't know. Obviously, we don't get a lot of feedback in return from any of our listeners other than the people that we know. And so it'd be nice to get an email from someone that does listen just to say, just to encourage that we keep doing this because, or to, you know, to tell us what we could do better or what, you know, what they'd want to hear, what they'd want to be involved in. And, you know, so if you do want to send us an email, that is
pornstarsfutilepodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, we could review porno movies. It might come
to
that at some point. Get it? Get it?
Oh, God.
Did you get it?
To. I don't want to get it on me.
Oh, okay.
It's
good for your hair.
Is it? I don't think he's done anything else, but it's this white boy rapping about being a frat boy. Have you heard that? They probably would play it.
Sounds awful.
It's totally awful. It's totally awful. And he's, oh God.
You listen to it like because you hate it? Like, it's one of those things where you hate it?
But as he's singing it, I just want to start pummeling him.
Yeah.
And, oh God.
Wow.
He's one of those rappers, too, that rhymes the same word with the same word. It's like, you know.
Wow.
Wow.
Wow.